Chapter 1. Tears from Steel. The wheel of time turns, and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. Legend fades to myth, and even myth is long forgotten when the age that gave it birth comes again. In one age, called the Third Age by some, an age yet to come, an age long past, a wind rose around the alabaster spire known as the White Tower. The wind was not the beginning. There are neither beginnings nor endings to the turning of the Wheel of Time. But it was a beginning. The wind twisted around the magnificent tower, brushing perfectly fitted stones and flapping majestic banners. The structure was somehow both graceful and powerful at the same time. A metaphor, perhaps, for those who had inhabited it for over 3,000 years. Few looking upon the tower would guess that at its heart, it had been both broken and corrupted, separately. The wind blew, passing through a city that seemed more a work of art than a workaday capital. Each building was a marvel. Even the simple granite shopfronts had been crafted by meticulous Ogier hands to evoke wonder and beauty. Here a dome hinted at the form of a rising sun. There a fountain sprang from the top of a building itself, cresting what appeared to be two waves crashing together. On one cobbled street, a pair of steep three-story buildings stood opposite one another, each crafted into the form of a maiden. The marble creations, half statue, half dwelling, reached with stone hands toward one another as if in greeting, hair billowing behind, immobile, yet carved with such delicacy that every strand seemed to undulate in the wind's passing. The streets themselves were far less grand. Oh, they had been laid out with care, radiating from the White Tower like streaks of sunlight. Yet that sunlight was dimmed by refuse and clutter, hints at the crowding the siege had caused. And perhaps the crowding wasn't the only reason for the disrepair. The storefront signs and awnings hadn't seen wash or polish in far too long. Rotting garbage piled where it had been dumped in alleys, drawing flies and rats but driving away all others. Dangerous toughs lounged on the street corners. Once they'd never have dared do that, and certainly not with such arrogance. Where was the White Tower? The law? Young fools laughed, saying that the city's troubles were the fault of the siege, and that things would settle down once the rebels were quelled. Older men shook their gray-streaked heads and muttered that things had never been this bad, even when the savage Aiel had besieged Tarvalen some 20 years previously. Merchants ignored both young and old. They had their own problems, mainly on South Harbor, where trade into the city by way of the river had nearly come to a halt. Thick-chested workers toiled beneath the eyes of an Aes Sedai, wearing a red-fringed shawl. She used the one power to remove wards and weaken the stone, while the workmen broke the rock apart and hauled it away. The workmen had sleeves rolled up, exposing curls of dark hair along burly arms, as they swung pick or hammer, pounding at the ancient stones. They dripped sweat onto rock or into the water below as they dug at the roots of the chain that blocked passage into the city by river. Half of that chain was now indestructible Quendiyar, called Heartstone by some. The effort to tear it free and allow passage into the city was an exhausting one. The harbor stoneworks, magnificent and strong, shaped by the power itself, were only one of the more visible casualties of the silent war between the rebel Aes Sedai and those who held the tower. The wind blew through the harbor, where idling porters stood watching the workers chip the stones away, one by one, sending flakes of gray-white dust afloat on the water. Those with too much sense, or perhaps too little, whispered that such portents could mean only one thing. Tarmon Gaiden, the last battle, must quickly be approaching. The wind danced away from the docks, passing over the tall white bulwarks, known as the Shining Walls. Here at least one could find cleanliness and attention in the tower guard who stood watch, holding bows. Clean-shaven, wearing white tabards free from stain or wear, the archers watched over their barricades with the dangerous readiness of snakes prepared to strike. These soldiers had no intention of letting Tarvalin fall while they were on duty. Tarvalin had repelled every enemy. Trollocs had breached the walls, but been defeated in the city. Arthur Hawkwing had failed to take Tarvalin. Even the black-veiled Aiel, who had ravaged the land during the Aiel War, had never taken the city. Many claimed this as a great victory. Others wondered what would have happened if the Aiel had actually wanted to cross into the city. The wind passed over the western fork of the River Arranon, leaving the island of Tarvalin behind, passing the Alandair Bridge, soaring high to the right, as if taunting enemies to cross it and die. Past the bridge, the wind swept into Alandair, one of the many villages near Tarvalin. It was a village mostly depopulated, as families had fled across the bridge for refuge in the city. The enemy army had appeared suddenly, without warning, as if brought by a blizzard. Few wondered at it. This rebel army was headed by Aes Sedai, and those who lived in the White Tower's shadow rarely gambled on just what Aes Sedai could and couldn't do. The rebel army was poised, but uncertain. Over 50,000 strong had camped in a massive ring of tents around the smaller camp of Aes Sedai. There was a tight perimeter between the inner camp and the outer one, a perimeter that had been most recently been intended to exclude men, particularly those who could wield Saidin. Almost, one could think, that this camp of rebels intended to set up permanently. It had an air of common daily life about its workings. Figures in white bustled about, some wearing formal novice dresses, many others clothed in near approximations. Looking closely, one could see that many of these were far from young. Some had already reached their graying. But they were referred to as children, and obedient they were as they washed clothing, beat rugs, and scrubbed tents beneath the eyes of serene-faced Aes Sedai. And if those Aes Sedai glanced with uncommon frequency at the nail-like profile of the White Tower, one would be mistaken in assuming them uncomfortable or nervous. Aes Sedai were in control. Always. Even now, when they had suffered an indelible defeat, Egwene Alvir, the rebel Ammerlin's seat, had been captured and imprisoned within the tower. The wind flicked a few dresses, knocked some laundry from its hangings, then continued westward in a rush. Westward past towering Dragon Mount, with its shattered and smoking apex, over the black hills and across the sweeping Carolane grass. Here, pockets of sheltered snow clung to shadows beneath craggy overhangs or beside the occasional stands of mountain blackwood. It was time for spring to arrive, time for new shoots to peek through the winter's thatch, and for buds to sprout on the thin-branched willows. Few of either had actually come. The land was still dormant, as if waiting, holding its breath. The unnatural heat of the previous autumn had stretched well into winter, pressing upon the land a drought that had baked the life from all but the most vigorous plants. When winter had finally arrived, it had come in a tempest of ice and snow, a lingering, killing frost. Now that the cold had finally retreated, the scattered farmers looked in vain for hope. The wind swept across brown winter grass, shaking the trees' still barren branches. To the west, as it approached the land known as Arid Doman, cresting hills and short peaks, something suddenly slammed against it. Something unseen. Something spawned by the distant darkness to the north. Something that flowed against the natural tide and currents of the air. The wind was consumed by it, blown southward in a gust, across low peaks and brown foothills, to a log manor house, isolated, set upon the pine-forested hills in eastern Arid Doman. The wind blew across the manor house and the tents set up in the wide open field before it, rattling pine needles and shaking tents. Rand Al-Thor, the dragon reborn, stood, hands behind his back as he looked out the open manor window. He still thought of them that way, his hands, though he now had only one. His left arm ended in a stump. He could feel the smooth, Sayadar-heeled skin with the fingers of his good hand. yet he felt as if his other hand should be there to touch. Steel, he thought. I am steel. This cannot be fixed, and so I move on. The building, a thick-logged structure of pine and cedar, after a design favored by the Domani wealthy, groaned and settled in the wind. Something on that wind smelled of rotten meat. Not an uncommon scent these days. Meat spoiled without warning, sometimes only a few minutes after butchering. Drying it or salting it didn't help. It was the Dark One's touch, and it grew with each passing day. How long until it was as overwhelming, as oily and nauseating as the taint that had once coated Sayadin, the male half of the One Power? The room he stood in was wide and long, thick logs making up the outer wall. Planks of pine, still smelling faintly of sap and stain, made up the other walls. The room was furnished sparsely, fur rug on the floor, a pair of aged crossed swords above the hearth, furniture of wood with the bark left on in patches. The entire place had been decorated in a way to say that this was an idyllic home in the woods, away from the bustle of larger cities. Not a cabin, of course. It was far too large and lavish for that. A retreat.
Rand?
A soft voice asked. He didn't turn, but felt Min's fingers touch his arm. A moment later, her hands moved to his waist, and he felt her head rest upon his arm. He could feel her concern for him through the bond they shared. Steel, he thought.
I know you don't like, Min began.
The boughs, he said, nodding out the window. You see those pines, just to the side of Bashir's camp?
Yes, Rand, but...
They blow the wrong direction, Rand said. Min hesitated, and though she gave no physical reaction, the bond brought him her spike of alarm. Their window was on the upper floor of the manor, and outside of it, banners set above the camp flapped against themselves. The banner of light and the dragon banner for Rand, a much smaller blue flag bearing the three red king's penny blossoms to mark the presence of House Bashir. All three flew proud, yet just to the side of them, the needles on the pines blew in the opposite direction. The Dark One stirs, Min, Rand said. He could almost think these winds a result of his own Taviran nature, but the events he caused were always possible. The wind blowing in two directions at once? Well, he could feel the wrongness in the way those pines moved, even if he did have trouble distinguishing the individual needles. His eyesight hadn't been the same since the attack on that day he'd lost his hand. It was as if he'd looked through water at something distorted. It was getting better, slowly. This building was one in a long line of manors, estates, and other remote hiding places Rand had used during the last few weeks. He'd wanted to keep moving, jumping from location to location, following the failed meeting with Semirag. He'd wanted time to think, to consider, and hopefully time to confuse the enemies that might be searching for him. Lord Algorin's manor in Tyr had been compromised. A pity. That had been a good place to stay. But Rand had to keep moving. Below, Bashir's Saldaeans had set up a camp on the manor's green, the open patch of grass out front bounded by rows of fir and pine trees. Calling it the green seemed an irony these days. Even before the army's arrival, it hadn't been green. It had been a patchy brown, winter thatch broken only occasionally by hesitant new shoots. Those had been sickly and yellow, and they had now been trampled by hooves or booted feet. Tents covered the green. From Rand's vantage on the second floor, the neat lines of small peaked tents reminded him of squares on a stone's board. The soldiers had noticed the wind. Some pointed, others kept their heads down, polishing armor, carrying buckets of water to the horse lines, sharpening swords or lance points. At least it was not the dead walking again. The most firm-hearted of men could lose their will when spirits rose from their graves, and Rand needed his army to be strong. Need. No longer was it about what Rand wanted or what he wished. Everything he did focused only on need, and what he needed most was the lives of those who followed him. Soldiers to fight and to die, to prepare the world for the last battle. Tarmon Gaiden was coming. What he needed was for them all to be strong enough to win. To the far left of the green, running below the modest hill where the manor rested, a twisting stream cut the ground, sprouting with yellow stickfinger reeds and scrub oak that had yet to send out spring buds. A small waterway to be certain, but a fine source of fresh water for the army. Just outside the window, the winds suddenly righted themselves, and the flags whipped around, blowing in the other direction. So it hadn't been the needles, after all, but the banners that had been in the wrong. Min let out a soft sigh, and he could feel her relief, though she still worried about him. That emotion was perpetual lately. He felt it from all of them, each of the four bundles of emotions tucked away in the back of his mind. Three for the women he had allowed to place themselves there, one for the woman who had forced her way in against his will. One of them was drawing closer. Avienda, coming with Rourke, to meet with Rand at the manor house. Each of the four women would regret their decision to bond him. He wished he could regret his decision to let them, or at least his decision to allow the three he loved. But the truth was that he needed Min, needed her strength and her love. He would use her as he used so many others. No, there was no place in him for regret. He just wished he could banish guilt as easily.
Ilyena,
a voice said distantly in Rand's head.
My love.
Luz Theron Telamon, Kinslayer, was relatively quiet this day. Rand tried not to think too hard about the things Semirag had said on the day when Rand had lost his hand. She was one of the Forsaken. She would say anything if she thought it would bring her target pain.
She tortured an entire city to prove herself, Luz Theron whispered. She has killed 1,000 men 1,000 different ways to see how their screams would differ from one another. But she rarely lies. Rarely.
Rand pushed the voice away.
Rand, Min said, softer than before. He turned to look at her. She was lithe and slight of build, and he often felt that he towered over her. She kept her hair in short ringlets, the color dark, but not as dark as her deep, worried eyes. As always, she had chosen to wear a coat and trousers. Today, they were of a deep green, much like the needles on the pines outside. Yet, as if to contradict her tailored choice, she had had the outfit made to accentuate her figure. Silver embroidery in the shape of bonnibel flowers ran around the cuffs, and lace peeked out from the sleeves underneath. She smelled faintly of lavender, perhaps from the soap she'd taken to most recently. Why wear trousers only to trim herself up with lace? Rand had long abandoned trying to understand women. Understanding them would not help him reach Sheol Ghul. Besides, he didn't need to understand women in order to use them, particularly if they had information he needed. He gritted his teeth.
No, he thought. No, there are lines I will not cross. There are things even I will not do.
You're thinking about her again, Min said, almost accusatory. He often wondered if there was such a thing as a bond that worked only one way. He would have given much for one of those.
Rand, she's one of the Forsaken, Min continued. She would have killed all of us without a second thought.
She wasn't intending to kill me, Rand said softly, turning away from Min and looking out the window again. Me she would have held.
Min cringed. Pain. Worry. She was thinking of the twisted male Adam that Semirag had brought, hidden, when she'd come impersonating the Daughter of the Nine Moons. The Forsaken's disguise had been disrupted by Cad Swain's Tirangrial, allowing Rand to recognize Semirag, or at least allowing Luz Theron to recognize her. The exchange had ended with Rand losing a hand, but gaining one of the Forsaken as his prisoner. The last time he'd been in a similar situation,
It hadn't ended well. He still didn't know where Asmodian had gone or why the weasel of a man had fled in the first place. But Rand did suspect that he had betrayed much about Rand's plans and activities.
"Should have killed him. Should have killed them all."
Rand nodded, then froze. Had that been Luce Theron's thought or his own?
"Luce Theron," Rand thought. "Are you there?"
He thought he heard laughter, or perhaps it was sobbing.
"Burn you," Rand thought. "Talk to me. The time is coming. I need to know what you know. How did you seal the Dark One's prison? What went wrong? And why did it leave the prison flawed? Speak to me."
Yes, that was definitely sobbing, not laughter. Sometimes it was hard to tell with Luce Theron. Rand continued to think of the dead man as a separate individual from himself, regardless of what Semirog had said. He had cleansed Sayadin. The taint was gone, and it could touch his mind no longer. He was not going to go insane.
"The descent into terminal madness can be abrupt."
He heard her words again, spoken for the others to hear. His secret was finally out. But Min had seen a viewing of Rand and another man melded together. Didn't that mean that he and Luce Theron were two separate people? Two individuals forced into one body?
"It makes no difference that his voice is real," Semirog had said. "In fact, it makes his situation worse."
Rand watched a particular group of six soldiers inspect the horse lines that ran along the right side of the green, between the last line of tents and the line of trees. They checked the hooves one at a time. Rand couldn't think about his madness. He also couldn't think about what Cadswain was doing with Semirog. That left only his plans.
"The north and the east must be as one. The west and the south must be as one."
That was the answer he'd received from the strange creatures beyond the red stone doorway. It was all he had to go on.
North and east.
He had to force the lands into peace, whether they wanted it or not. He had a tenuous balance in the east, with Ilion, Mayen, Kyrian, and Tyr all under his control in one way or another. The Seanchan ruled in the south, with Altara, Amadisia, and Taraban under their control. Murundi might soon be theirs if they were pressing in that direction. That left Andor and Elaine. Elaine. She was distant, far to the east, but he could still feel her bundle of emotions in his head. At such a distance, it was difficult to tell much, but he thought she was relieved. Did that mean her struggle for power in Andor was going well? What of the armies that had besieged her? And what were those borderlanders up to? They had left their posts, joining together and marching south to find Rand, but giving no explanation of what they wanted of him. They were some of the best soldiers west of the Spine of the World. Their help would be invaluable at the last battle. But they had left the Northlands. Why? He was loath to confront them, however, for fear it could mean yet another fight, one he couldn't afford at the moment.
Light.
He would have thought that of all people he could have depended on the Borderlanders to support him against the Shadow. No matter. Not for the moment. He had peace, or something close to it, in most of the land. He tried not to think about the recently placated rebellion against him in Tyr, or the volatility of the borders with Seanchan lands, or the plottings of the nobility in Kyrian. Every time he thought he had a nation secure, it seemed a dozen others fell apart. How could he bring peace to a people who refused to accept it? Min's fingers tightened on his arm, and he took a deep breath. He did what he could, and for now he had two goals. Peace in Arad-Daman, and a truce with the Seanchan. The words he'd received beyond the doorway were now clear. He could not fight both the Seanchan and the Dark One. He had to keep the Seanchan from advancing until the last battle was over. After that, the light could burn them all. Why had the Seanchan ignored his requests for a meeting? Were they angered that he had captured Semirag? He had let the Suldam go free. Did that not speak of his good faith? Arid-Daman would prove his intentions. If he could end the fight in Elmoth Plain, he could show the Seanchan that he was serious in his pursuits for peace. He would make them see. Rand took a deep breath, studying out the window. Bashir's 8,000 soldiers were erecting peaked tents and digging an earthen moat and wall around the green. The growing bulwark of deep brown contrasted with the white tents. Rand had ordered the Ashaman to help with the digging, and though he doubted they enjoyed the humble work, it did speed the process greatly. Besides, Rand suspected that they, like he himself, secretly savored any excuse to hold Sayadin. He could see a small group of them in their stiff black coats, weaves spinning around them as they dug up another patch of ground. There were 10 of them in the camp, though only Flynn, Naif, and Narishma were full Ashaman. The Saldaeans worked quickly, wearing their short coats as they cared for their mounts and set pickets. Others took shovelfuls of dirt from the Ashaman mound and used it to pack into the bulwark. Rand could see that there was that displeasure on the faces of many of the hawk-nosed Saldaeans. They didn't like making camp in a wooded area, even one as sparsely flecked with pine as this hillside. Trees made cavalry charges difficult and could hide enemies as they approached. Davram Bashir himself rode slowly through the camp, barking orders through that thick mustache of his. Beside him walked Lord Talayan, a portly man in a long coat and wearing a thin Domani mustache. He was an acquaintance of Bashir's. Lord Talayan put himself at risk by housing Rand. Sheltering the troops of the Dragon Reborn could be seen as treason. But who was there to punish him? Arid-Daman was in chaos, the throne under threat from several rebel factions. And then there was the great Domani general Rodal Iteralda and his surprisingly effective war against the Seanchan to the south. Like his men, Bashir went about unarmored in a short blue coat. He also wore a pair of the baggy trousers that he favored, the bottoms tucked into his knee-high boots. What did Bashir think of being caught in Rand's Tavirin web? In being, if not in direct opposition to the will of his queen, at least uncomfortably to the side of it. How long had it been since he had reported to his rightful ruler? Hadn't he promised Rand that his queen's support would be speedy in coming? How many months ago had that been? I am the dragon reborn, Rand thought. I break all covenants and vows. Old allegiances are unimportant. Only Tommen Gaiden matters. Tommen Gaiden, and the servants of the Shadow. I wonder if we'll find Grendel here, Rand said thoughtfully. Grendel? Min asked. What makes you think she might be? Rand shook his head. Asmodian had said Grendel was in Arid-Daman, though that had been months ago. Was she still here? It seemed plausible. It was one of the few major nations where she could be. Grendel liked to have a hidden base of power far from where the other Forsaken lurked. She wouldn't have set up in Andor, Tyr, or Ilion. Nor would she have been caught in the lands to the southwest, not with the Seanchan invasion. She would have a hidden retreat somewhere. That was how she operated. Probably in the mountains, secluded, somewhere here in the north. He couldn't be sure she was in Arid-Daman, though it felt right to him from what he knew of her, from what Luz Theron knew of her. But it was only a possibility. He would be careful watching for her. Each of the Forsaken that he removed would make the last battle that much easier to fight. It would... Soft footsteps approached his closed door. Rand released Min, and they both spun, Rand reaching for his sword. A useless gesture now. The loss of his hand, though it wasn't his primary sword hand, would leave him vulnerable if he were to face a skilled opponent. Even with Sayadin to provide a far more potent weapon, his first instinct was for the sword. He'd have to change that. It might get him killed someday. The door opened, and Cadswain strode in, as confident as any queen at court. She was a handsome woman, with dark eyes and an angular face. Her dark gray hair was up in a bun, a dozen tiny golden ornaments, each one a Tirangrial or Angrial, hanging in their places atop it. Her dress was of a simple, thick wool, tied at the waist with a yellow belt, with more yellow embroidery across the collar. The dress itself was green, which was not uncommon, as that was her Aja. Rand sometimes felt that her stern face, ageless like that of any Aes Sedai who had worked long enough with the power, would have fit better in the red Aja. He relaxed his hand on his sword, though he did not release it. He fingered the cloth-tied hilt. The weapon was long, slightly curved, and the lacquered scabbard was painted with a long, sinuous dragon of red and gold. It looked as if it had been designed specially for Rand, and yet it was centuries old, unearthed only recently. How odd that they should find this now, he thought, and make a gift of it to me, completely unaware of what they were holding. He had taken to wearing the sword immediately. It felt right beneath his fingers. He had told no one, not even Min, that he had recognized the weapon. And not, oddly, from Luz Theron's memories, but from Rand's own. Cadswain was accompanied by several others. Nynaeve was expected. She often followed Cadswain these days, like a rival cat she found encroaching on her territory. She did it for him, likely. The dark-haired Aes Sedai had never quite given up being Wisdom of Emmons Field, no matter what she said, and she gave no quarter to anyone she thought was abusing one under her protection. Unless, of course, Nynaeve herself was the one doing the abusing. Today she wore a dress of gray with a yellow slash at the waist over her belt, a new Domani fashion, he had heard, and had the customary red dot on her forehead. She wore a long gold necklace and slim gold belt with matching bracelets and finger rings, both studded with large red, green, and blue gems. The jewelry was a Tirangrial, or rather several of them, and an Angrial too, comparable to what Cadswain wore. Rand had occasionally heard Nynaeve muttering that her Tirangrial, with the gaudy gems, were impossible to match to her clothing. When Nynaeve wasn't a surprise, Olivia was. Rand hadn't been aware that the former Domani had been involved in the information gathering. Still, she was supposed to be even stronger than Nynaeve in the One Power, so perhaps she had been brought for support. One could never be too careful where the Forsaken were concerned. There were streaks of white in Olivia's hair, and she was just a bit taller than Nynaeve. That white in her hair was telling. Any white or gray on a woman who wielded the One Power meant age. A great deal of it. Olivia claimed to be 4 centuries old. Today, the former Domani wore a strikingly red dress, as if in an attempt to be confrontational. Most Domani, once unleashed, remained timid. Not so with Olivia. There was an intensity to her that almost suggested a white cloak. He felt Min stiffen, and he felt her displeasure. Olivia would help Rand die eventually. That had been one of Min's viewings, and Min's viewings were never wrong. Except that she'd said she'd been wrong about Moraine. Perhaps that meant that he wouldn't have to. No. Anything that made him think of living through the last battle, anything that made him hope, was dangerous. He had to be hard enough to accept what was coming to him. Hard enough to die when the time came.
You said we could die, Luz Theron said in the back of his mind. You promised.
Cadswain said nothing as she walked across the room, helping herself to a cup of the spiced wine that sat on a small serving table beside the bed. Then she sat down in one of the red cedar chairs. At least she hadn't demanded that he pour the wine for her. That sort of thing wasn't beyond her.
Well, what did you learn? He asked, walking from the window and pouring himself a cup of wine as well.
Min walked to the bed with its frame of cedar logs and a skip-peeled headboard, stained deeply reddish-brown, and sat down, hands in her lap. She watched Olivia carefully. Cadswain raised an eyebrow at the sharpness in Rand's voice. He sighed, forcing down his annoyance. He had asked her to be his counselor, and he had agreed to her stipulations. Min said there was something important he would need to learn from Cadswain. That was another viewing. And in truth, he had found her advice useful on more than one occasion. She was worth her constant demands for decorum.
How did the questioning go, Cadswain Sedai? He asked in a more moderate tone.
She smiled to herself.
Well enough?
Well enough, Nynaeve snapped. She had made no promises to Cadswain about civility.
That woman is infuriating!
Cadswain sipped her wine.
I wonder what else one could expect from one of the Forsaken, child. She has had a great deal of time to practice being infuriating.
Rand, that creature is a stone, Nynaeve said, turning to him. She's yielded barely a single useful sentence despite days of questioning. All she does is explain how inferior and backward we are, with the occasional aside that she's eventually going to kill us all.
Nynaeve reached up to her long single braid, but stopped herself short of tugging on it. She was getting better about that. Rand wondered why she bothered, considering how obvious her temper was.
For all the girl's dramatic talk, Cadswain said, nodding to Nynaeve, she has a reasonable grasp on the situation.
Fah.
When I said well enough, you were to interpret it as well as you might expect, given our unfortunate constraints. One cannot blindfold an artist, then be surprised when he has nothing to paint.
This isn't art, Cadswain, Rand said dryly. It's torture. Min shared a glance with him, and he felt her concern. Concern for him? He wasn't the one being tortured.
The box, Luz Theron whispered. We should have died in the box. Then it would be over.
Cadswain sipped her wine. Rand hadn't tasted his. He already knew that the spices were so strong as to render the drink unpalatable. Better that than the alternative.
You press us for results, boy, Cadswain said, and yet you deny us the tools we need to get them. Whether you name it torture, questioning, or baking, I call it foolishness. Now, if we were allowed to—
No,
Rand growled, waving a hand, a stump, at her.
You will not threaten or hurt her.
Time spent in a dark box, being pulled forth and being beaten repeatedly.
He would not have a woman in his power treated the same way. Not even one of the Forsaken.
You may question her, but some things I will not allow.
Nynaeve sniffed.
Rand, she's one of the Forsaken. Dangerous beyond reason.
I am aware of the threat, Rand said flatly, holding up the stump where his left hand had been.
The metallic gold and red tattoo of a dragon's body sparkled in the lamplight. Its head had been consumed in the fire that had nearly killed him. Nynaeve took a deep breath.
Yes, well, then you must see that normal rules shouldn't apply to her.
I said no, Rand said. You will question her, but you will not hurt her.
Not a woman. I will keep to this one shred of light inside me. I've caused the deaths and sorrows of too many women already.
If that is what you demand, boy, Cadswain said tersely, then that is what shall be done. Just don't whine when we are unable to drag out of her what she had for breakfast yesterday, let alone the locations of the other Forsaken. One begins to wonder why you insist we continue this farce at all. Perhaps we should simply turn her over to the White Tower and be done with it.
Rand turned away. Outside, the soldiers had finished with the horse lines. They looked good. Even and straight, the animals given just the right amount of slack. Turn her over to the White Tower? That would never happen. Cadswain wouldn't let Semirag out of her grip until she got the answers she wanted. The wind still blew outside, his own banners flapping before his eyes.
Turn her over to the White Tower, you say, he said, glancing back into the room.
Which White Tower? Would you entrust her to Elida? Or did you mean the others?
I doubt that Egwene would be pleased if I dropped one of the Forsaken in her lap. Egwene might just let Semirag go and take me captive instead. Force me to kneel before the White Tower's justice and gentle me just to give her another notch in her belt.
Nynaeve frowned.
Rand,
Egwene would never...
She's Amarlin, he said, downing his cup of wine in one gulp. It was as putrid as he recalled. Aes Sedai to the core. I'm just another pawn to her.
Yes, Luz Theron said. We need to stay away from all of them. They refused to help us, you know. Refused. Said my plan was too reckless. That left me with only the 100 companions. No women to form a circle. Traitors. This is their fault.
But I'm the one who killed Ilyena. Why?
Nynaeve said something, but Rand ignored her.
Luz Theron, he said to the voice. What was it you did? The women wouldn't help. Why?
But Luz Theron had begun sobbing again, and his voice grew distant.
Tell me,
Rand yelled, throwing his cup down.
Burn you, Kinslayer, speak to me!
The room fell silent. Rand blinked. He'd never, never tried speaking to Luz Theron out loud where others could hear. And they knew. Semirag had spoken of the voice that he heard, dismissing Rand as if he were a common madman. Rand reached up, running a hand through his hair. Or he tried to, but he used the arm that was only a stump, and it accomplished nothing.
Light, he thought. I'm losing control. Half the time I don't know which voice is mine and which is his. This was supposed to get better when I cleansed Sidene.
I was supposed to be safe.
Not safe,
Luz Theron muttered.
We were already mad. Can't turn back from that now.
He began to cackle, but the laughter turned to sobs. Rand looked around the room. Min's dark eyes were so worried he had to turn away. Olivia, who had watched the exchange about Semirag with those penetrating eyes of hers, seemed too knowing. Nynaeve finally gave in and tugged on her braid. For once, Cadswain didn't chastise him for his outburst. Instead, she just sipped her wine. How could she stand the stuff? The thought was trivial, ridiculous. He wanted to laugh. Only the sound wouldn't come out. He couldn't summon even a wry humor. Not anymore.
Light, I can't keep this up. My eyes see as if in a fog. My hand is burned away and the old wounds in my side rip open if I do anything more strenuous than breathe. I'm dry, like an overused well. I need to finish my work here and get to Sheogul. Otherwise, there won't be anything left of me for the Dark One to kill.
That wasn't a thought to cause laughter. It was one to cause despair. But Rand did not weep, for tears could not come from steel. For the moment, Luz Theron's cries seemed enough for both of them.